In today's episode, I sit down with Dan Churchill, who is one of the world's most exciting celebrity chefs. He is the chef and co-founder of Charlie Street, a fast casual restaurant in New York that serves healthy farm-to-table eats and shares some of his best recipes online to help improve your life, your health, and your performance. In the episode today, Dan and I talk all things food and nutrition and how it's become a foundation of his life and everything he does. And specifically, we talk about gut health and how feeding the gut, taking care of the gut, can improve all aspects of your life, from your performance, your sleep, your mental clarity, and everything in between. The gut truly is the second brain and very, very powerful when you take care of it. We talk about how you can improve your gut health, what your diet should look like, and how you can work with your gut and for your gut to improve every part of your life. So let's dive in to today's episode. You are listening to the Bear Performance Podcast, where we discuss topics on fitness, nutrition, business, and leadership to help you perform at your highest level and go one more. I'm your host, Nick Bear, founder of Bear Performance Nutrition and prior U.S. Army infantry officer. We've scaled our brand through our core pillars of transparency, service, and integrity. And now I want to share with you, through our experience and our guests, how you can optimize your life. Welcome to the show. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Bear Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Bear, founder and CEO of Bear Performance Nutrition. And today we are welcomed by a legend himself, Dan Churchill. Welcome.
Dude, thanks for having me, my man. Thank you. Chief Epic Officer of BPN.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, what are you doing down in Austin, Texas this week?
Dude, I essentially a couple things. Main thing is I've come down to hang out with this dude called Nick Bear and his awesome team.
That sounds epic.
That is pretty awesome. But whilst I'm down here, man, I've caught up with some buddies who actually I work with at Super Coffee CEO Jim DeSico. I think you met him a couple weeks ago. I'm also here to help support the Austin Gilgronis as well, the rugby team. They're playing a game tonight and making sure they get their food all sorted before heading to Miami for a weekend with HPLT with Brian Mazza.
That's going to be awesome.
It's going to be so good, man. I'm so pumped.
Are you cooking the food for the rugby team?
No, I don't do the cooking. I just help facilitate the team who do the cooking. I help make sure it's like to set degree, but also we have some players that obviously get injured or they get sick, and particularly making sure they hit their goals to make sure they get back to performance is ideal. So I come in there. I also help those athletes who need to improve or in some capacity, and we help with holistic nutrition to make sure it works.
That's awesome.
Yeah, sick.
So Devin and Jimmy were here a few weeks ago. And
what was that energy like?
Oh, it was great. Dude, it was us three sitting in this room. We could have done this all day, where I left that meeting with them and I was just jacked up on life. And they were telling about this ranch. They just bought this 60-acre ranch in Texas. They just bought. Have you been out there yet?
Man, no. We meant to go yesterday. It started raining, so we had to cancel. But yeah, dude, I've already claimed part of land there to build, firstly, an outdoor kitchen setup. And also, I'm going to, like, even a little bunker for me to just live in. It sounds awesome.
It looks insane. I was watching clips, and, like, Devin and Jimmy are sawing down trees, like, building rivers and lakes. And it's just, like, them out there with their forerunner. I'm like, yo, you guys are you're wreaking havoc on this land. It's awesome.
The whole day yesterday, Jimmy's dad was out there with like, I forgive me because I don't know the actual names of all the heavy machinery, but it was like out with one of those small, I guess.
Like a backhoe?
Yeah, he had a little backhoe, exactly what it was. And he was there doing all day. He was just like moving stuff, sending FaceTime videos to Jimmy, mate, checking in on things. And he gets home last night, absolutely battered and bruised. And he goes, so I think you should move the cedar tree line from here to here. And they're like, it was just the funniest thing to hear this kind of operation take place only in Austin, like, or Texas, or like, I just couldn't imagine it happening anywhere else.
That meeting like really sparked interest in me because the last 3 years, you know, being here in the Austin area, I've been looking for land. I've walked ranches and farms multiple times a year looking for the perfect spot. I haven't found it yet.
Sure.
Jimmy and Devin found like a piece of gold. Like that is ideal because you want rolling features and terrain. Mm. You want some big hardwoods, not just a bunch of cedars and mesquites that are invasive in Texas, Central Texas. So I've been looking for years, but now after seeing their land, I told Wyatt that we need to find the ranch and the farm, and we need to start. Because what I want to do, like my goal is, and this will kind of go into like what we're leading into in this podcast. I was talking to before about how I'm really getting into soil regeneration and regenerative agriculture. So my goal is I want to get this property, this farm, this ranch. I want to grow my own vegetables and produce. I want to have my own steer out there and pigs and chicken. And I want to create my own food supply, my own food source on this farm. Like that is my goal, the true farm to table.
That's awesome, man.
That's what I want to do.
So cool, dude. Like, yeah, firstly, so annoying those boys come here for like 6 weeks and they get a piece of land and you've been working on it for a couple of years. Like that sucks. But secondly, like the fact that you want to look at the cycle of life in a way and have it so you're self-sufficient is so exciting, because I think for someone like yourself who is a storyteller, you can help inspire so many people to understand where their food comes from. And ultimately it's like where our food comes from like its own food, the soil. And we have this understanding that food just is at the supermarket. Well, now we can see that soil, the impact of the soil, the nutrients of the soil has an impact on what is grown, how it's grown, and how effective it's grown. And then that's what we eat. So along the way, it's like, that's why soil health is so important. There's obviously a lot of problems going on right now with the way that we're treating some areas of land and opposite others where it's doing really well. But for you to be able to find that out and do that, it'd be so cool, especially like naming your animals and like sitting there running around, you got your vegetables and whatnot, and you would wreak havoc. Imagine the outdoor workouts you would do on the farm.
Well, for me, I see it as a win-win, because like physical labor like that is very meditative for me. So I noticed being out there, like working the land, would provide me so much benefit, not just from like a nutritional standpoint, but like mental clarity and just being able to relax.
It can be addictive though.
Oh, I believe it. That's like anything else. I have an addictive personality. Yeah. Like if there's something I want to do, the day I purchase that ranch, you know I'm going to be there every single day until it's done.
Yep.
So have you seen the documentary Kiss the Ground?
Yeah, man. I actually know the producer, Ronald Ingehart. He's a great dude, man.
Steph and I just recently watched that, and that was really eye-opening.
Mm, it's pretty crazy. Have you seen like that one? Have you seen, what was the most recent one with even the Marine World as well? Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, there's another one. I forgot the name of it. And everyone listening to this podcast is like yelling out to Dan going, it's this one. I'm gonna think of it later. But these kind of docos that are coming out in these places like Netflix are so unbelievable to see, because they're giving you a foresight for what's actually going on in these areas. And Kiss the Ground does a really good job of really championing the ground. Something we kind of forget. We champion a lot of our farmers and even the produce that we get from like organic farmers in general, but the soil is like where it starts. So it's pretty exciting, isn't it?
So when you first got into food and nutrition, because like for me, when I first got into food and nutrition, my view of food is completely different than it is now, or was completely different. And it has evolved. And I think a lot of things, especially passions in your life, they evolve over time. So what I'm curious about, because I know how I found food and nutrition, then that was from an eating disorder. That's what caused like this interest. For you, where did you say, I love food and nutrition? Was food, like, is it the chicken before the egg? Was it the food first or nutrition first? And then like, what did that evolve look like?
Yeah, dude, that's a great question. I think it ultimately came down to what food demonstrated and had the power to do. And I mean that in the sense, at the time I didn't realize it, but that's why I loved it. So for example, like I loved eating. Like I'm a middle child of three boys on the northern beaches of Sydney. Like loved eating, loved, very active individual. So obviously was always hungry. But I actually really enjoyed watching cooking shows. Like my family always did. And
I'm the same way.
Dude.
I've always been that way.
It's so, yeah, you love cooking. And like, it's so cool because it's such a creative thing. It's very meditative. It's artwork as well. You're working with your hands. And in that time when I was younger, I kind of found myself like kind of, you know, when you're growing up in adolescence, you're a bit disconnected from your family, not in a way that's obvious, but like you're off starting to do your own thing as an adolescent. At the time, I realized that the food actually was the one time of the day we brought us all together, and that's why I loved it. So I love the harmonious aspect of what food did. And then combine that with me wanting to learn more. So I started to create recipes, and over time, Dad actually put a roster together. So each day of the week would be a different schedule for one of us to cook for each other. So over time, I'd be like shotgunning an extra couple of nights.
How old were you at this point?
I was like, so when I started, it was like 11, 12 years old. And I reckon that's when the roster started. By the time I was like 14, Mum and Dad no longer had to fake saying they liked the food. So it took them 2 years, strong investment. Because by that time, I understood the basics of cooking. You know, it wasn't just like a quick, easy meal. I was like going out with Mum and buying like good quality produce and proteins. And, you know, I'd be interested in speaking to the farmers about like, what type of mushroom is this? And where does this come from? And so my love for food really was attracted to that creative aspect and just interest. Like I was just interested in stuff. Like I still am today. I'm so interested. So
did you grow up around like plentiful farms? Were you in like the farm country?
No, not really, man. Like I grew up on the northern beaches of Sydney. Okay. So like we had 20 beaches going north to south, and 95% of Australians live on the coastland. So, you know, we've got this beautiful country, but most of the coast obviously is on the outside. So most people live on the outside. But in saying that, like a lot of the farmers are inland. And so you find yourself going out there every so often on school trips or field trips, or friends have like a country house or whatever that you'd go visit. But ultimately, like I lived in board shorts my whole life. You know, the idea of going out to dinner for me was not like some extravagant restaurant, because on the northern beaches, it was like Thai takeaway was going out to dinner. And in one way, it kind of shielded me from what food could be. But on the other side, it also made me appreciate the littlest things of what food also brings. And so it was a really cool like point in my life where I didn't actually know the potential how what you could do with food was just yet. But I also was just so enamored with like some of the basics of like taste and flavor. And then it got to a point where like I was cooking quite a lot, and not anything that was too specific to like healthy or Italian or whatever it was. It was just like I wanted to cook and just cook recipes. But then my mom got diagnosed with like celiac disease. And so we had to start cooking meals where she was not able to obviously have gluten. And I kind of was like, this is kind of lame. Like it sucks that I have to sit here and watch Mom not eat the same food as us. And it kind of broke that moment that we had of cooking food for each other. So I started taking for myself to create recipes that were, number one, always had to be delicious for my family, but also exactly the same meals that we all could have. So I started to understand then how the body works with autoimmune diseases. And this is like the age of 16. So like, you know, I took an interest in it because obviously it's my mom. And then through that, I started to learn more about health. Obviously, I was training as like someone who wanted to play professional sport as in rugby. So I was taking it pretty seriously to learn more about nutrition, but flavor was still, and to this day, is always where I'm like, you know, number one. But following that, like I realized that my mates as well struggled to cook, because no one at the age of 16 was cooking. Their parents were.
No, it's still very early and young.
So like, you know, I'd be speaking to my mates, and at the time they were starting to get girlfriends. And even this happened for a couple of years now. I get to like even 17, 18. And their girlfriends would come up to me at parties, and they would be like, dude, what the hell? They're talking to you, not me. And I'm like, guys, it's just about food stuff. And so I'm going to help you out. You're going to talk to your girlfriends at parties. You're also going to make them feel very happy when you're going to learn how to cook food for them. So what I did, I started creating recipes for them on the side. So I sent it to them. They'd cook it for their girlfriend. They'd be getting brownie points, which is great. Everybody wins.
That actually sounds like an app in the making. It's like the new Tinder.
Yeah, straight up. Like,
dude, I'm telling you. It's like this app that comes with like this recipe handbook.
Oh, man. Okay.
That's a business opportunity.
We're claiming that right now. Wyatt, I'm so sorry, bro. I know we do too many things, but this is an opportunity.
That's gold.
That's so good. So, yeah, like I was doing this like pretty regularly. Put up like a Microsoft doc, pretty enamored with a lot of recipes. And then this is when I was, I finished high school and I went and did my undergraduate degree as a sport and exercise scientist in sport and exercise management. And then throughout that time, I was training people. I was working pretty basic level kitchens. So I'd be training people, and then at nighttime, I'd be working in kitchens. And then by the time I got to master's degree, I was working as an internship at professional rugby teams and Institute of Sport. So it's like for all the athletes going to the Olympics. And I realized that through the fact that I was learning all this more understanding of human physiology through my degree, I was able to talk to athletes and really break down what the performance coaches and everything was talking about. But also the nutritionists, they actually didn't know how to speak to an athlete because they would talk to them as if they're talking to a scientist. They're saying, you need to eat this, you need to eat that, you need to do that, and kind of like took away the love of food, but telling them to fuel themselves that they have to do.
I found the same thing, actually. I was studying nutrition in college. And a lot of people that were in the study with me, they were going to school to be registered dietitians to focus on disease. So a lot of our studies in terms of nutrition focused on cardiovascular disease and diabetes were obviously super important. And I wanted to learn about it. However, my love and passion was more so nutrition for sports performance.
Applied nutrition, isn't it?
And I would bring this up to professors and I'd ask questions and I found they were completely dumbfounded. They didn't know how to apply these nutrition principles to sports performance. Now, I was really disappointed in like those responses because I wanted to know that these professors were experts in nutrition as a whole and applying those functions to more than just disease. So I found that. I think that's also another reason where I felt obligated to do my own research and dig further and find the answers because I knew they were out there. It's just a matter of finding them.
And that's such a thing is like, there's the studies, there's the relevant information, the practical application of actually the food, but it's also like, you know this, it's like, how do you speak to an athlete? You don't speak to them in the way that they're not going to understand because firstly, they're going to feel dumb, admittedly, they will. So you got to find a way to relate to them and be able to tell them this is the information, get across your point, but do it in a way that's actually like inspired to do it. So what I do exactly what I did with my mates with their recipes and did the same thing, recreating recipes based on the materials I was getting from the nutritionist and applying it to these athletes for them to do it themselves. And then after that, I realized I'm like, well, I did this on a celiac-based autoimmune disease situation. I did it for my mates for a fun-loving situation. Now I did it for athletic performance. And I realize I'm like, okay, there's clearly something that I really love here. I love communicating the message of cooking and food. I love the side of applied nutrition and performance. So I want to do something with this. At the time, I was making decent money, you know, training people as a coach. And I realized I'm like, it's just not as fulfilling for me as what I really want to be doing with food. And so I started to self-publish a book. And I was like, what do I need to write a book? Okay, you need pictures of recipes. You need recipes themselves, a story to it, a graphic designer, and someone's going to shoot it. And that's what happened. So I put together my first book in 6 weeks.
How old were you at this point?
I think I was 2021. 2021.
Okay.
Yeah. So sold my first book and it was like funny because the first run was like, I think it was like a thousand books. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And it's funny because you know this, it's one thing to like purchase all the items. You then got to sell it. So I was like thinking, okay, who's going to want to buy my book? I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I don't think guys are going to buy my book because they're going to be either too scared or too ashamed. Maybe my mates will. But ultimately, it's going to be like grandmothers, girlfriends, and mothers who can't find a book for their son, grandson, or boyfriend. So I went to all these gift stores, all these bookstores. I'm like, guys, I got the perfect gift for any mom, grandma, or girlfriend comes in looking to buy something for their individual. And so I just said, this is what you need to say. This is how good the book is. And go. And the person was like, okay, can I buy one? I'm like, one? Like, yeah, it's like one. I'm like, yeah, of course. They're like, how much is it? And I'm like, I hadn't even thought that far ahead yet. I'm like, $20. Thinking I'm like, recommend a retail, like $40, right? Didn't even know that. I just said it. So she's like, no, I meant a box. I'm like, oh, you want a box? Okay, cool. How much is in a box? So I had to like start retracing most basic elements to selling. Hadn't even thought that far. I hadn't even thought of selling yet. I'm like, I'm just going to have these books and they'll just take off the shelf. It'll be fine. But
that's how the best stories start though.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's my story in a nutshell. It really is.
You bought all this product. All of a sudden you got all this like supplementation, like sick guys. So I've got these subs. Do you want to buy one? And you're like, how much are they? I got no idea. You tell me, what do you want to pay for?
Yeah, I always use the kind of the phrase where you just initially assume when you're starting a business that the supply is going to create demand. You know, like I buy the books, someone's going to want to buy them. Then you have to realize, hold on, I have to create the demand. The supply alone doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, I think every business owner goes to that.
Is it funny? It's like when you had that first thing of supplements on, like in your room, you're like, oh, sick. This is awesome. And like, oh, hang on. It's now stuck here until I sell it. Like,
it's like, I gotta make payments for a loan. So what was his first book called? What was the title?
Dude, you love it. It's called Dude Food.
I love that.
Yeah. And so every chapter was built around scenarios rather than breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I did it. It was like, how to impress a girl, sandwich in the gym, food's not on the go. So all these scenario-based things, like how to impress a girl was a very popular chapter. But yeah, it's like, it turned out to, it sold really well. Like I sold out in 2 weeks, then I had to do another run.
That's awesome.
And then here's a funny. So my first print run cost me $20 per unit. So like, that's a lot. So every book that I sold cost me $20.
Is that because of lower volume orders?
Yeah, but I also went through a wrong printing house, right? My next place cost me $1.15.
Wow.
So like, I'm going to check out what, like, I didn't do any comp analysis, right? So I'm like, okay, so let's go check out some other printing options. And like one guy was like, yeah, the best we can do is $1.15. I'm like, that works. $1.15 works better than 20. So anyway, so instead of, I made like, you know, $40 on $1.15 is much better than $40 on 20. And
those profit margins are not bad. Yeah. Not bad at all.
But I think as well, like what worked in my favor was a young kid, like, you know, surfy hair. Everyone's like, this is kind of cool. This guy did it himself. And so I had that going for me. But then I was like, okay, this book did really well. I realized though that I wanted to really focus on the health aspect. And so I then jumped into kitchens a bit more full time. So I'll be training these athletes with these teams throughout the day. And then at nighttime, every single day of the week, I would take it upon myself to go to a different restaurant. So I'd go to a restaurant like, hey, as long as I learn something small, I don't care. Cleaning, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it for free. No problem. So Monday would be Italian. Tuesday would be Southeast Asian. Wednesday would be French. Thursday would be, you know, Argentinian. And over the course of 6 months, I learned a lot culturally. I learned a lot from different chefs to the point that like one of these restaurants would be like, okay, we need you to be a bit more full time now. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, so I'm now going to be like prepping and line cooking and all the way up. And you work up the chef line. So after like a couple of years of doing this, I was actually a chef. And so it was pretty awesome. I loved it. Like Docker's coming in, the heat of the battle, all that kind of stuff.
So all your training was hands-on, like in the trenches.
Mm.
That's amazing. Mm. That's absolutely amazing.
I'm not trained by going to any culinary school. I'm self-taught, but also I've been many years inside a restaurant kitchen and from a variety of chefs, all because I had an interest, a passion for this wonderful thing of food. But also like I knew that this allowed me to really go down this path of health. Like it really did. Because one thing doing the studies, and you know this, like one thing doing the studies of nutrition and human physiology, it's another thing to find a way to be able to put it into a practical sense. And so learning the kitchen art allowed me to know like the very extent of restaurant world, which allowed me to kind of dabble in the home cooking aspect. If I could do restaurant cooking, I could definitely have a lot of information for people at home cooking level. And so I then wrote my second book known as The Healthy Cook. And that one was purely built around health. So it took into account gluten intolerances. It took into account plant variety. And it took into account like people who wanted to understand skill set, like the levels of protein, fats, and carbohydrates in their meals, and also the time it takes for them to cook. And we created videos associated with that. And so we did like, you know, videos that you could scan the book with. It was pretty much a new book of like the time. It was pretty well ahead of it.
What year was this?
I was 23, so this is 8 years ago.
Okay.
So yeah, and we launched that book and that sold out as well. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And at that time I was starting to get some media attention because, I was a young guy, I had sold a couple of books and could communicate healthy food on different platforms. And so that got me really interested into more studies, like in particular journals around health, gut health, all that kind of thing. And I got an opportunity with America with TV and also book deals that allowed me to get the visa to come over here. And so as a result, like it took a couple of years, but I eventually moved over. And so I moved over. And in that time, I got to meet with some amazing scientists, got to meet some researchers, and I effectively had to start my whole brand again because no one knew me in the US. But what I did know is like, okay, I know that I can help communicate the message of what the scientific studies are doing and telling us about our bodies through food, but do it in a way that food shines through and is a champion. And so that's what's led me to be consistent with my brand today. It's like, find ways to make food tasty because it's motivational. Like people are going to come back for that. But ultimately, when they ask for it, back it up with the science around the performance of it all. And so now working with some of the best athletes in the world, I'm able to like help them improve themselves, but ultimately like give them a way of doing it in an exciting manner, because food is such a relaxing time. Like for you, I'm sure you agree. It's like when you get to eat, it's some of the best times of your day because you're feeling like it's the downtime, the chill time for you to relax. Sometimes you're not relaxing because you have to be quickly eating on the go. But like when you're eating with Steph, your family, your friends, it could be some of the best times of your day.
Well, that's why like one of my favorite things to do, and Steph and I talk about this all the time, one of our favorite things to do together or with friends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, I love going to dinner.
Mm.
And not just going to dinner to have a meal, but going for the experience, the social aspect of it. I love like getting with a group of friends or just me and Steph. We go, we get like a good cocktail somewhere, and then there's courses of food where we're getting like a good appetizer, some meals, some desserts. And, you know, I've learned over time and over years to love food for different reasons. Before, when I was younger, I loved food because I just wanted something that tasted okay, like a cheap burger or a hot dog or, you know, something like that, and just be full. I just wanted to eat a bunch of it. Now, though, food for me is, I think it's interesting how your taste buds kind of change and what you crave changes when you learn more about its function. So I'll crave foods that I know will make me feel better and feel strong and powerful and healthy. And I'll crave those. And some people can't appreciate that. I don't understand or haven't experienced the function itself. So my view on food has changed. I have always put a big emphasis on the social aspect of it, trying different foods.
Mm.
And I love the way it brings people together. But like for me, I am super relaxed when I'm just, there's a restaurant or I'm with a group of friends, maybe at my house or a friend's house, and everyone's just having a good time. We're eating good food, having good drinks. And there's just something about that that calms me down and thoroughly loves every moment of it.
Dude, that's a thing that we continue to sometimes absolutely just neglect with athletes and non-athletes in general. It's like people say, it's like, hey, these guys, they need this food, they need it now. And I'm like, okay, this athlete needs to perform, but it's also, you look at their stress levels. Look at what's going on with themselves right now. Are they enjoying themselves? If I then chuck food in front of them in a stressful environment, one, we scientifically know that's actually going to do more detriment than actually benefit. But two, they're not going to enjoy it. And it is so important that in this day and age, everything's so quick that despite all the nutritional information we know, it's important for people to use food as a time to relax and enjoy what they are doing, because it has so many benefits outside of just the nutritional value. And you said it before, food brings us all together. It's also a universal language. I've traveled the world doing shows and whatnot. One of the best things I can do is put a food from a culture in front of someone that I do not speak the same language with and be able to communicate with a smile because of the food I've put in front of them. It is unbelievably powerful.
The things you were saying made me think, there was a time in my life, it was like 2017, it was right after I transitioned out of the military, and my goal in life was just to get as big as possible. I just wanted to get jacked and strong. And over a few months of just unhealthy, dirty bulking, like no focus on nutrient quality, put a lot of size on. And then I wanted to diet down. And after that diet, I looked the best I ever have. Like absolutely bone shredded, veins everywhere, no energy, no libido, no health, but I looked great. And I remember that no meal was enjoyable. Meals were only enjoyable because they filled my stomach. Some of those feelings of starvation went away a little bit.
Mm.
But this diet was so deep that I didn't enjoy any meals. And I was constantly stressed and I couldn't relax and calm down. I think bridging that gap between athletic performance and fueling for athletic performance, but also allowing athletes, you know, professional athletes or anyone who considers themselves an athlete to relax and calm down around meals, still enjoy them, but still get nutrients out of that. I think a lot of people struggle with that.
It's huge though. We've been built on this desired way of seeing marketable magazines and people looking great and being, I want to be like that. And then when it comes to the journey, we actually don't enjoy the journey. People would see you all the time across your socials and be like, I want to be like Nick. That's awesome, right? It's so good. But some people go about the wrong way to be like you because one, they haven't got the same gut microbiome as you. They don't have the same facilities and resources as you. But ultimately, they haven't got the same will that you do to do certain things. But you've also done something that I love. Like when we talked about my podcast, you were saying that you now eat for performance. It's such a good way of looking at it because it's so much more enjoyable. I know this is like, okay, we're guys, right? And a lot of people who are looking to lose weight be like, well, how do you do that for losing weight? And it's actually still the same. It's simple, but you're looking to look after yourself as opposed to take away from yourself. And I think that is such a unique spin on why you're doing it. And going back to what you're talking about, I just want to bring up a factor about there's this aspect to our brain and something known as our vagus nerve. Our vagus nerve connects our brain to our gut. Now, what's interesting about that is we have the parasympathetic autonomous system and we've got the sympathetic. So parasympathetic is rest and digest, all right? Sympathetic is where you're alert, all right? You're high octane energy and focused. The purpose of the rest and digest state, the parasympathetic, is to do just that, rest and digest. Now, to be in the parasympathetic state, you're in a relaxed environment, you're maybe meditating, you're chilled, and you're not stressed. You're opposite to that high cortisol environment. However, if you're in the sympathetic state and you start to eat, your body is not primed to consume and break down the foods efficiently. So that is where that aspect of being around food in the right setting, emotionally, mentally, and physically, is so important to help you actually take on the food you're about to have. There's many studies that look at people who are in the sympathetic versus the parasympathetic, and it shows the vast detriment to eating in the sympathetic for the same amount of calories, for the same amount of macronutrients compared to the parasympathetic. And for those listening in, the parasympathetic, we're not saying you have to meditate before eating. We're not saying that. It's just simply that you're in a position where you're enjoying your food, speaking to your family, friends, or even on your phone doing something you want to be doing, like relaxing, watching a movie, as much as it is, that's also the parasympathetic state because you're in a rest and digest state. So that's one aspect why the gut and the brain connection is so important to performance because they help drive how we are able to actually break down food.
I've never actually heard of that, but it makes – so like I'm literally thinking about this in my head. It's making so much sense. Mm. When I think back to some of the most stressful – months of my life. I mean, this past 7 months for me has been pretty stressful for the amount of new projects we've taken on. And, you know, I had the Ironman prep series and documenting and just got married. Like, there was a lot going on. And during the day when I would eat my lunch, I would have stomach discomfort all the time. And since a lot of that stress has gone away, we built more systems, more infrastructure, hired more people, finished up projects. After meals recently, I have not had any issues.
But you're eating the same food.
Same food.
Mm-hmm.
That's super, super interesting.
It's so funny when this is a really good time for everyone listening right now to take this on. It's like, I want you to imagine your pretty consistent state of eating and just have a think about the parallels and how you feel afterwards. And so if you're in a pretty specific rest state consistently, you probably notice you don't have as much discomfort unless you have an issue with the particular food that you're eating. But if you're someone who's stressed, running between places, like trying to slam it down, whatever it is, you know, you may be going to the bathroom more consistently. You may have just like a stomach ache, stomach cramps, as Nick was talking about. It's something that all can be solved with just your state of mind during your eating practices. We work this a lot with athletes. I was on a project in Sweden where I was with an athlete who was at the World Championships. It was a pretty hectic, stressful time. You know, it was like instead of actually cooking for one person, I cooked for six on this particular occasion for the purpose of the one person I was cooking for was the athlete, but I wanted the athlete to not feel so alone. I wanted them to feel as if they were a part of, you know, a team, even at the dinner table. So they could walk away and have their event the next day and eat and sleep in a way that was very beneficial to them, as opposed to watching their tape, seeing how they're meant to perform, watching it and being asked questions, blah, 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 blah. That's stressful because you're constantly on, you're focused. But if you take that away, maybe play a card game at the table and you're with your friends and asking things not related to work, you'd be surprised how much better and more efficient you actually digest your food.
With that being said, what is your take on meal timing and meal frequency? Do you prefer to eat your meals when it's convenient and you feel relaxed and calm rather than, hey, at 9 a.m., I have to have a meal, at 12 p.m., a meal, 3 p.m., a meal? What is your take on meal timing?
Yeah, meal timing is a good question. I feel there's this term bio-individuality where we are made up individually for ourselves. We've got our DNA, which is specific to us, or if we're a twin, we have the same. But our gut microbiome truly makes us different. Now, gut microbiome are our like wonderful little warriors living inside of us. So there's different factors, like meal timing is one of them, type of food you're having and the amounts, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone is different. But what I will say is I don't want people to stress about trying to relax. Does that make sense? So the idea of someone thinking, okay, I've got to eat this time because that's when I'm going to be most relaxed. No, it's for me, what works is I know I'm going to have either breakfast or not have it. I'm either fasting or I'm not. All right. What I will say is that meal timing around my performance, if I've got an event, like if I'm training the half Ironman or if you're training, you have to really be a bit more switched on to when you should be eating. You need to look after your fuel source. You really do need to be switched on. Like I was telling the other day, I hit 4,600 calories and I didn't do anything purely because my body's trying to recover from an event and being under the weather. So if I don't fuel myself efficiently, not only am I going to recover slower, but also I'm not going to be able to actually, you know, improve anyway. I'm actually going to lose weight. So what I would suggest is if you are not an intermittent faster, I would definitely suggest eating in the morning. Absolutely. I wouldn't say any time that you have to do it is as soon as you get up. I think it's when it feels comfortable and it's right for you. I have people who get up hungry and starving. So even before they go to the bathroom and wash their face, they need to eat. I don't say 2.5 hours later, you got to eat again. It's not like that. I'd say you need to eat essentially. I'm more concerned about the amount of food you are having in a day as opposed to when you are having it. And that's, I think, a bigger focus because ultimately athletes are a bit different because they're trained and paid professionally to do their job. And they don't have as many distractions outside of their job to do so, so they can get paid to eat when and where. But for the average individual, when it comes to timing, it's so much more important to get the right amount of foods in and the right foods in than it is to get the timing in, because your body, believe it or not, can adapt over time. If you become super regimented and your body thinks it's coming in a certain time, it's going to do less work because it's going to be almost like an automatic mode. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
You need to have more catalysts in your life. So you're going to be priming your body at different stages to keep it guessing. It's like going to the gym. If you didn't shock your body, provide a new stimulus, you won't get as many benefits because you're constantly doing the same thing. So that's why it's important to change your food up. That's why it's important to change the timing of your food up. I would be specific to when you finish your meal, you do have that glycolytic window. There's not enough studies to actually support that. What I will say is pretty interesting around timing is that if you do a high intensity workout post meal, you will find that you can independently of insulin take glucose into the blood. So what I mean by that is usually what happens is insulin is secreted by the pancreas, produced by the beta cells, is required to actually attach to the glucose. It's either taken from the glycogen stores, stored as glycogen, and then it's glucose into the muscles to be used as energy. But in this instance, the body, using a process known as independent insulin glucose uptake, can just shovel the sugar, the glucose, into the muscle without needing to attach to an insulin receptor, which is pretty amazing. So what that is it's due to the fact that after a workout, there's all this demand, your body's hyped up and ready. So after a workout, it's a great time to shovel in a lot of carbohydrates in that state of mind because you're trying to fuel your body to support the activity you just did. So for me, for example, like a G1 sport is a perfect example of getting the right fuel in post-recovery. It's easy to digest. It takes on the right amount of carbohydrates and you're sorted, right? But I also, after that, you still need to get the right hydration and the food that's whole foods in after. The problem that we find is talking about timing is every individual is different with their gut microbiome makeup. So we'll say that, you know, Nick, you may be great at taking on whole foods pretty efficiently after a workout, right? Not everyone is. They don't feel good. You know, they don't have their receptors switched on efficiently after the workload. They feel sick, the idea of slamming down whole foods. So that's why we talk about more importantly to get the right amount of foods in throughout the day as opposed to particular timing. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
How do you feel about it?
I, over time, have evolved like all my things in nutrition. When I was really getting into learning more about nutrition, I got into it when I was really focused on like a bodybuilding style training. And this was 2010, 2011. So there was so much bro science being preached online.
I love the bro science.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, I look back and I laugh where because my diet is so focused on food quality now, I look back and I laugh. And I think about this in my runs a lot where I remember buying frozen bags of broccoli at Walmart. And I'd come home and it would be just like stalks. And you could tell there was like no nutritional value in it because the stalks were pretty much like white, you know? And for me though, that was a vegetable. But what I've learned over time is to listen to my body when it tells me, when my body tells me you're hungry, eat. So like my morning routine, and we're all creatures of habit. And my morning routine is I'll wake up, I'll drink coffee. I'll have some sort of carbohydrate source, an electrolyte source before a run. And then when I get back, my body is primed, like it wants food. It is craving food. And my body has changed over time. Like my gut microbiome, like everyone else's, has changed over time. And I think one thing that a lot of people need to learn and understand is the gut microbiome is so complex. I would love to be able to talk to my gut microbiome and ask it questions. Like, what do you need? What do you need more of a prebiotic? Do you need a fuel source? Do you need a food source? I think a lot of people need to realize that because everyone's body and gut microbiome in specifically is so diverse and different that we can't all be sharing these diets and say this works for everyone. This meal timing works for everyone. Keto is the answer. High carb, low carb, high fat, low fat. I've learned over time through experimenting what makes me feel the best. You know, and I found that too many carbs don't make me feel too good. Certain carbohydrate sources don't make me feel too good. I operate better on a higher fat, moderate carb. And I find foods that make me feel good and foods that don't. But I've gotten really heavily interested and involved in the gut microbiome over the last couple years. And more so now, more importantly.
Dude, I'm so glad you said something. That whole passage was amazing, but you also said you listen to your gut. And that's what we have to be doing with that phrase I said earlier, bio-individuality. It's one of the first things I say whenever I consult people. It's like, okay, number one, you know your gut better than I do. So if I tell you something and you're not ready for it, don't have it. If you're starving, you're still actually hungry after I prescribe something to you, take something on. Because you said it earlier, it's like meal timing is one thing, but understanding your body is so much more important. You know when you need it. Your body does give you signs. You said, I wish you could talk to my gut. You actually do talk to your gut. It tells you through your stool. It tells you through other means of messaging, through your hormones. You can get signs like rashes and stuff like that when it tells you you're deficient in things, and that's all extended from the gut microbiome. It's an amazing thing. Like, gut health is so amazing to me because I feel like as much as I'm like super into cooking, you know, making everything delicious, the performance aspect of it, there's a strong correlation between performance, nutrition, and the gut. For those who don't know, like Dr. B, you're going to have on the podcast.
I am, yes.
Dude, I cannot wait to listen to this episode because he's become a really good friend of mine and he's just so good at explaining all this. He knows more information on this topic than anyone I know. He talks about how much gut microbiome we have. It is just unbelievable the amount we have. He talks through the process of what dietary fiber is and why it's important for us. But ultimately, it's one thing I said earlier, you got your DNA. Now, there was a study done at the Twins Institute, the UK registry in London, all right? And they looked at twins. So their job is to look at twins to help compare gut microbiome because the DNA of twins is the same. But if they still look different over time in their development, how does that make sense? How is it that two twins who have the same DNA have differences in their physical phenotype, their physical appearance, their physical output? And that is to do with a couple of things. They're factors such as epigenetics, so factors of the lifestyle. They help you read the code of the DNA and also your gut microbiome, because your gut microbiome is what helps us be truly different. I'm talking about this right now in the sense that even if you are a twin, your microbiome is what makes you so different. They're the ones that break down dietary fiber, not us. So they're the ones that help us translate messages to our hormones. They're the ones that help regulate our satiety hormones that tell us when we're hungry or, you know, we're full. But that's where the importance of having a pretty solid and balanced lifestyle comes in, eating the right foods, whole foods, and getting enough sleep. Because, like, this is what's interesting. There was a study done that looked at people only getting, I know we talked about sleep earlier, so I just want to drop this in. This is how important the gut is. If you have, like, on average 5 hours of sleep a night, your body has this unfortunate inability to regulate your satiety hormones efficiently, so your leptin and your ghrelin. So unfortunately, you think you're not full, so you continue to take on food. And this study showed that if you have 5 hours of sleep only on average a night, you had an extra 300 calories to your day. So over the course of 7 days, you had an extra day worth of calories for the average human. It's pretty crazy just to think about that, just due to sleep and then how much that affects your hormones.
I've been diving into a big whole optimization frenzy, I guess you'd call it, the last couple like weeks and months, where I'm starting to research and experiment with different optimization techniques, red light therapy, the chili sleep pad, wearing my Whoop, tracking my sleep, tracking the quality of my sleep, just experimenting with all these different things. And I think when it comes down to it, if people could learn more and understand more about their gut and their sleep, just those two things, they could make massive differences. And I'm not even talking about just performance in the gym or like running and training, just the way they feel on a daily basis. Because my whole optimization interest right now is not to be able to run faster or lift heavier weights or get stronger. That's not where I'm trying to optimize. I'm trying to optimize where, how do I feel when I wake up? How can I feel better? How do I feel in the middle of the day? How do I feel better? How do I feel when I'm going to sleep and how do I have deeper sleep? How do I optimize those parts of my life? And that's what I'm finding a lot of interest in right now. And what's scary is so many people don't fuel their body properly. And if you think of the majority, I'm saying probably 98% of the world, what they're putting in their body, can you only imagine the effects it has on your mental health, your mind, your clarity, your ability to perform at work, with family, have conversations, have relationships, everything. It's insane.
Dude, it's unbelievable the impact that food and exogenous things, exogenous means we take on from the outside world, have on our body. So like you take on the right foods and they're going to be broken down efficiently to the point that, so I'll break this down. So you got your prebiotics, which is dietary fiber, which comes from a variety of different whole food plants. You got your probiotics, which is your bacteria. And just to preface this, I learned this from Dr. B. So he's going to repeat this on your show and everyone's going to be like, oh, Dr. B said it so much better, which is so much true. So you got your probiotics. And then the result of that is your dietary fiber is consumed by your probiotics. We don't consume dietary fiber, they do. But the resulting byproduct are your postbiotics. Now, all that is done efficiently and you eat the right variety of prebiotics using dietary fiber, you essentially are going to be in a better position to look after your brain, your hormones, and everything else going on inside you. We now know that whole foods has a much better, firstly, thermic effect on our internal state than processed foods. We also know that whole foods does a better job in looking after our brain health and our brain messaging system. The fact that our brain and our gut are connected through this vagus nerve and actually helps control the autonomous parasympathetic nervous system aspect we're talking about earlier is truly mind-blowing. But all this is great. What does this mean? Ultimately, whether you're an athlete or a not athlete, it doesn't matter. You have to listen to your gut and you have to take into account that, okay, am I eating enough plants, whether I eat meat or not? Eating more plants is the biggest thing. And getting a variety of different plants at that. And I find that what I'm so excited by, man, like I cannot tell you how excited I am. I think the next phase is world. And like you don't have to be a high performer to get the benefit of what athletes get. And this is what's so exciting. It's like I get to create healthy recipe ideas for people to perform the best for themselves in a way that they can actually recreate it Because ultimately all it is, the number one thing is like eating more plants in your throughout your week. That's truly what it is, because it has the dietary fiber, it helps support the probiotics, you get the postbiotics, and then you support the gut permeability. So what happens is if the gut is lined correctly, you're not allowing anything that shouldn't go through it, go through it. And that's what happens with like celiac disease, and you get this thing called gut dysbiosis where the actual cells between the gut open up and allow things that usually would be not able to go through, go through. And what happens? The body sees that as a foreign object and it starts an autoimmune response because it starts attacking the body. That's where you get a lot of these things like celiac disease and such. But that permeability is structured together properly by having the right dietary fiber. And I've seen this with athletes. I've seen this with athletes who have not adjusted to their gut microbiota over time. I've had to help restructure what they're doing. But I've also had athletes who've only got 4 weeks until a meet and they go, can you help change my gut microbiome? I'm like, there is no time. We can't do that. You know, it's just simply not it. You have to listen to your gut, man. And like, it's unbelievable how smart it is. It really is. But I'm stoked that you're taking the sleep aspect into it, because I think sleep is actually more important as a priority than it is to the food. As I said earlier, if you don't get enough sleep, you're not going to digest food efficiently.
Yeah. I mean, I know how important sleep is. I've known it for a long time, you know, and I've realized that with a lot of the things that I'm doing and trying to build right now, I'm probably not going to get more sleep during the week than I'm currently getting.
What are you getting right now?
Well, last night I got 6 hours and 50 minutes,
okay,
which was more than usual.
Okay.
Sunday night was 4.5 hours, and then Monday night was 5 hours.
Have you always been like that? Like the past, like obviously in the military, absolutely. Even the past like 5 years, have you been like that?
Yeah, I've been like that for the last 10 years.
So that's what your body thinks, right? Your body's noted that it's doing the best it can with 5 or 6 hours. But what's interesting is like, imagine if Nick got 8 hours.
Oh, I want 8 hours. I want it. But the thing is, what has to give?
Mm.
You know, what has to give? And I'll get to that point where I'm getting more sleep. But what I can do right now is focus on getting better quality sleep.
Yes.
And that comes with nutrition and like the chili pad that's cooling me down, not waking up sweating.
Yep.
Or the red light that I use before going to bed. Like, I love those. I love those things.
Do you want to tell the listeners what you told me beforehand of what you
Oh man. So last night was a vibe, guys. I recently bought a Juve red light. I just wanted to experiment with it and see what it's all about. And I fell in love with it. I think red light, infrared light therapy is super powerful. I did find though, when I used it in the morning, it was okay. But when I used it at night, it really just, it kickstarts that circadian rhythm and releases the melatonin. I'm so tired. But last night, I was like, you know, tonight's gonna be a vibe. I gotta do some red light. So I'm standing in this room we have in our house and butt naked. Standing in front, just like leaning back, completely relaxing, because it's a relaxing experience. You feel like these warm lights on you. You're naked. You're free. I was sipping on the supplement work right now, Strong Sleep, which has a mushroom base.
Mm-hmm. Rashi, or what is it?
It's Pico 2.
Okay.
So it's Compound Solutions studied blend of mushrooms.
Nice.
So turkey tail, reishi, lion's mane.
Yeah.
So I was sipping on this mushroom blend of Strong Sleep. I'm in front of the red light, butt naked, and I'm listening to classical orchestra. And I was in this moment thinking, this is the vibe right now. I left, went to the bedroom, turned on my chili sleep. I was out in a matter of, you know, minutes. The time for me to fall asleep is quick. Like when my head hits a pillow, I'm asleep within 3 minutes.
Yep.
Like my quality of sleep is great. It's just getting more sleep, which is something to focus on. But one of my questions for you is, you have this knowledge on the gut microbiome and training athletes and being a chef and cooking. What do you cook, or what are you trying to cook on a daily basis to feed the gut microbiome? Because one thing I heard a few days ago that has stuck with me, there's these things I hear, these little nuggets, and they'll stick with me on my morning runs.
Love it.
And it said, fiber and prebiotics are not for you. They are for your gut. They're not to feed you. They are to feed your gut. And I thought about that and it stuck with me. So we've been trying to focus more on plant diversity. We subscribe to this service here in the Austin area. It's called Farmhouse Delivery, where essentially you get a monthly or a weekly subscription, and you can change it. You can add meats, you can add more produce, you can add local ranch eggs, like pasture raised eggs. But essentially, they bring you the shipment every week. They drop it off at your door. Mine comes on Thursday. And you put on the old bins, they drop off the new bins. And it's this wide range of fruits and vegetables, all organic. But a lot of the vegetables and produce is sourced from local farms. So you get whatever is in season. And it changes. I don't know if I'm getting a bunch of kale and apples and bananas, or if I'm getting some potatoes and fennel and fresh onions, and it changes. And I've loved this because we're trying to increase our consumption of plant diversity, different plants. One thing that I just started eating this past week that I learned from Jane, Wyatt's wife, is she was like, you got to start eating these organic purple sweet potatoes. And I was like, why? She's like, they will increase your bowel movements, like the most solid bowel movements. If you love nutrition, if you love gut health, you also love bowel movements.
Love bowel movements.
Healthy bowel movements. So I started eating these organic purple sweet potatoes for two meals a day. Probably have 18 ounces of sweet potatoes a day. I have had the best bowel movements ever.
Are you a like morning guy?
Morning, yeah.
Morning and yep. Just the one time?
2 to 3.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm the same. Three. Same. Morning guy, 2 to 3, straight up. And it's like, I tell you what, having a healthy bowel movement, it's just so good. I talk about this. I'll come back to your point in a second. I just need to know this. I had an episode of my podcast where we talked about the different textures and consistency and how that tells you something about your poop. There's this thing called the Bristol stool chart. Essentially, it ranged from like 1 to 7 and like, you know, 3 to 4 being ideal, just like if you were lane 4 or 3, 5 in an Olympic swimming pool. It's like the middle part is where you want to be. But it's just really interesting because it talks about the different consistency. You're analyzing your stool and you see like, hey, that's pretty good. All right. A little self high five there. But you also know, like, that's why people who are sick have diarrhea, right? It's just your gut's not right. There's problems going on. But
I'm constantly analyzing my bowel movements. Like, I asked Steph this one day. I said, like, what do your bowel movements look like? Mm-hmm. She's like, what do you mean? I don't look at them. You don't look at them.
Come on.
My head is halfway in the toilet. I'm inspecting. Like, I want to look at, you know, I think most people should be doing this because it tells you a lot about your diet and your gut.
100%.
Like, volume of bowel movement, like what color it is, what texture.
This is shit chat, by the way.
This is shit chat.
This is shit chat.
So I would love, actually, after you talk about like what your diet looks like.
Yep.
Talking about Zoe.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw you eating that blue muffin. We can dive into that then after that.
Okay, cool. So you definitely brought up dietary fiber. Yes, correct. So your probiotics, those bacteria in your gut, the winnings, they are the ones who digest dietary fiber. We don't do it. All right. So one of my favorite is butyrate, right? It takes on all these wonderful things the resulting aspect of them winning is a short chain fatty acids. And one of those is butyrate.
Like, right? Vegetables will produce the byproduct of vegetables.
Yes, exactly. So the dietary fiber in plants, you got dietary fiber. When we actually consume them, we don't break down the dietary fiber. Our bacteria do. The probiotics do, right? So it's like, hang on a second. So we've got these things living inside us. Yes. We've got these trillions of things living inside us that break down the food for us and their byproduct. It's almost like their shit, their poop, is the resulting benefit that
there's shit everywhere.
Yeah, there's just shit everywhere.
There's shit everywhere.
But they're checking their bowel movements, and if their bowel movements are on point, then everybody wins. But yes, that's why it's important to have all these different plants, because each one is specific to a particular type of bacteria. And so if you're feeding your gut a variety of plants, you've got a variety of bacteria that are winning. And you want to have a greater position of good bacteria than bad bacteria. Having a bigger amount of bad bacteria leads to that thing called gut dysbiosis I mentioned earlier, which is where you get the leaky gut and all those kind of things that cause catastrophic issues. But ultimately, going back to it, it's like, for me, I look at my day as color. I talk about this all the time. For those listening in, the best way for you to register with yourself how much dietary fiber and goodness you're putting into your body and the micronutrients, which is something else we can talk about, is ultimately how much color you're getting into your plate. If you get only greens and not enough reds or purples, you're going to be efficient in the greens but deficient in the reds and the purples. So I look at my day and I start my day with black coffee, go to the gym, come back, and I have supplement, whole foods, and then I go to work. at work, I'll get obviously a variety of different things based on the fact that I work in a restaurant. And so we'll get different shipments of things in. Throughout the day, I'll eat probably a couple of times. And at the end of the night, the same thing will happen. I'll have a meal based on, I know I'm like, oh, what do I feel like tonight? I feel like a curry, which is strong with turmeric and all the, you know, the benefit wins you get from the spices. But I know there's a lot of color in that. So I always like look at my week and see how many plants I can get in my week, a variety of colors. And if I've done that, I know I'm going to win. Because ultimately, I do base myself on like, you know very well, like how much, you've said this before, you can look at a plate now and tell you yourself generally how much protein, fats, and carbs you're getting in. I do the same thing, but I have a greater focus on my micronutrients. So the colorful ingredients such as the plants or the fruits and veg, because I feel like it's my job and responsibility to put greater emphasis on something we do not talk about enough so that it is talked about, because they're just as important as each other. With athletes, we talk about, you know, making sure they're consuming foods at the right times together. So it's rather than just having protein, it's actually having proteins with the micronutrients. And I use this analogy, use this cement truck analogy. Forgive me if it doesn't sound right, but effectively to get cement to a house to be used for building, you need the cement truck, you need the road, and a worker to activate the truck at the site. So if the cement is the protein, which is the building block, you then need all these micronutrients along the way to allow for that to actually get to the place in it. You need the road, you need the human, and you also need the truck. So all these things are required for the protein to do its job. And that's what we need to start thinking about. It's like, instead of thinking just protein, fats, and carbs, you need to have protein, fats, and carbs, potassium, magnesium, like you're so into magnesium. You need to have all these amazing things going to benefit not just the protein, fats, and carbs, but the other micronutrients as well. So how do I look at my week? I look it up with color, all right? And I try to make sure I get a variety of color. Yes, I look at like Oura Ring or Whoop and see how many calories I'm looking at as well. And I have to make sure, because I do have a fast metabolism, I've got to make sure I eat the right amount of foods. And if I don't get enough in, you know, I'm going to struggle for the next day. You know, you said this before yourself. You can rock up to a session and know if you fueled yourself correctly or not.
Absolutely. It's right away.
100%.
So how much emphasis do you put on the source of those plants?
Yeah, this is a huge topic. And coming back to what you said earlier on soil, right? To break this down, it's like if you have the best of the best and you get the best grown from the best, you're going to get the best that you can then ingest. However, if you get soil that's like 70% efficient, it grows the tomato at 70% the rate it should do. That tomato then goes to you. You're only getting like tomato with 30% of the nutrients. So you have to eat three times the amount of tomatoes just to get the recommended daily intake of what a tomato would usually do. So that's where the sourcing of your ingredients becomes super crucial, because if your soil health is at a pretty high premium, you're actually going to be ingesting a lot of nutrients. And this is where like, it's really interesting, the argument between cost and benefit come in, when in reality—
Oh, I'll talk about this all day.
Oh, bro, if you get the right amount in, you actually eat less because you've got more nutrients to supply yourself with and your body goes, I'm actually not full anymore. It's amazing you look at like strong dietary fiber along with carbohydrates and fats and all this goodness and you say, hang on a second, I'm actually really full. Even though I ate like half the amount I did yesterday, you think about it, you can eat cheeseburgers from a fast food outlet over and over and over again because they haven't got as much nutrient density in them. Anything that's nutrient dense is going to cause your body to go, slow down, I need to ingest this food and break it down properly.
We've been getting really into soil health lately, and I'll have some podcast episodes coming up about this. I'm excited
for that.
Yeah, you know, I'm a person of action, right? So we were watching the documentary Kiss the Ground, and just learning about soil regeneration and how erosion destroys soil. You know, soil and dirt, two different things. Growing up in Pennsylvania, we had some amazing topsoil. That's why we have so many like really good farms up there.
Yeah.
Down here in Texas, there's a lot of dirt, and that's where like the no-till farming comes into play and soil regeneration, all this stuff. But we were watching Kiss the Ground and just learning about soil. So me and Steph decided we need to create our own soil. We need to create our own little, before we buy the farm and the ranch, we need to start growing our own produce in our backyard. So we're building this, you know, some above ground planters, but we bought these two big boxes to make compost. So essentially I'm going to set those up. They just arrived. I ordered them right after watching the documentary, and we'll throw all of our compost in there. You know, we juice once a week too. So I'll throw all the pulp from the juice in there, and then you throw some worms in there and they break down. The worms break down this compost and make some super rich topsoil. And I can't wait for the moment where I can hold that topsoil in my hand and just think of all the nutrients in it.
It's like looking at, this is Nick looking at his first baby. It's
gonna be it'll be just like that. But it's one of those things where when you realize how important the soil is, you want to create more of it.
Well, you think about soil as another bit of life, right? That's where it all starts. What do we need? We need food, nutrition, sunlight, rest. What does soil need? Food, nutrition, hydration, soil, rest. It's crazy. Like, they're exactly the same parallels, light, everything. And unfortunately, due to a lot of mono agriculture, they don't get enough rest, nor do they get the variety of nutrients. Because when you actually plant something, you're actually supplying some sort of nutrients to the soil. But if you're planting the same thing over and over again, it's like us. If I ate corn for the rest of my life, I would be very sufficient in the nutrients that corn provides me. But everything else I'll be deficient in. And so the same thing applies to the soil. The soil reacts to what's planted to then, you know, supply that, but also be fed by it. So they have this thing called like family planting, where people will, instead of just like planting row by row by row the same crop, they'll like plant a bunch of things in one area so it helps regenerate the soil. Or they'll have years where they won't, like it'll be an off year where they'll allow the soil to chill out for a bit. Because what's happened, and you'll see this, is like a lot of the soil has not been had and have enough time to regenerate. It's never had rest, so it's constantly working. So the efficiency of the soil goes down, and all of a sudden it dies and it can't produce anything. So then what do the farmers do? They're like, not all farmers, but people who own that land, and go, oh, I'll just have to move to the next land. So that's what they do. So what we have to do is when we are taking from the land, we have to make sure we're giving back to it. We have to allow it to rest. We have to give it adequate nutrition and hydration and sunlight. Same thing that what we need.
I think it's a responsibility we have for the land as well. I mean, I shared that documentary after watching it, and so many people, it's a clear example, so many people react based off of a headline or a title and they don't want to dig deep into it. And some of these people that responded to me were negatively farmers. And my response was, if you just watch the documentary, if you implement this, you can make 100x of what you're currently making. You can have a greater yield. So I found soil regeneration is also one of my top interests lately too.
Oh no, I feel like there's another series coming along on soil regeneration.
I'll tell you what. Oh, so we're going to this farm that's right down the road from us, and they practice soil regeneration, no-till. So we're going to go do some filming there and learn more. But when I launch Bear Farm one day, it's going to be epic.
Yeah, and I shotgun being like the first chef you asked to cook there.
Absolutely. So I guess going to that with Charlie Street, you know, your restaurant in New York, that's farm to table. What does the sourcing look like for that, for food?
Yeah, man. So that's a great question. Everyone's like, how do you source the right food materials from like New York City? And New York is actually on a farmland. So the soil is very dense. It's very good.
It's like Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're able to like get some amazing suppliers and purveyors. We work like our eggs and our chickens come from a place up near called Hudson Valley Harvest. They're amazing. Like I've seen the pastures they get to walk on. And then like the same with our fruits and veg. Like we have this guy who essentially tells us what we have available. We have our core ingredients we use year round. Then we have like what's available to us. And so every now and then he's like, oh, I get this and that. And that's one of the cool things of being a chef, particularly in New York City. I get sent a lot of the newest things. And it's so funny. Like, I mean, this is a bit different. You know, like a lot of people who have a social media platform don't want to post things because it's like, oh, I should be getting paid for this. Whenever a farmer sends me material, I cannot but champion them. Do you know what I mean? Because like, it's like they have worked so hard for this thing and a lot of people just chuck that stuff out. I'm like, these herbs have done wonderful. That's another thing as well. We're also looking at the new generation of farming. You're talking about regenerative agriculture. There's a company called Square Roots Grow. There's Aero Farms. These companies are all built out of either shipping containers or warehouses that are looking at the sustainable agriculture of food over the next 20 to 50, even 100 years, where we can have younger farmers creating the most climatic accurate conditions for a given leafy. For example, basil coming out of Genova in Italy. That's why we call it pasta genovese whenever we're doing like a pesto pasta. Now, to have the climatic conditions of Jennifer in a shipping container. So the basil's grown to the same conditions is pretty amazing, but that's all we're seeing now with technology. We're finding ways that technology can help grow and use either soil or hydroponics to do so. It's pretty exceptional. But yeah, man, I think between soil and gut health, it's pretty exciting. Like going back to what we're talking about with Zoe, it's
yeah,
like
I want to hear about the purple or the blue muffin.
So you saw what I put on Instagram the other day, so it was?
Yeah, yeah. So I saw Dan posted this thing on Instagram and he works with this company called Zoe. And there was this blue muffin you were eating, and the context behind it was timing yourself to see how fast from consumption to excretion it took to move this. I'm assuming it turns your bowels blue.
Yeah, it does. So that's the trigger, right? So there was this scientist that worked with the team at Zoe that found out that if you measured the time it takes for you to consume and then excrete this blue individually consuming thing, in this case with a muffin. So you set the timer, and when you consume it and you hit the stopwatch and when it comes out, you go to, it was like bluepoopchallenge.com, which is part of Zoe, and you tell them information. You were able to actually tell them, you know, a particular number that correlated with the makeup of your gut microbiome. Because these scientists were able to look at, like, there was different given times, and that given times of how long it took you to either digest or excrete was associated with a particular type of gut microbiome makeup. And what I mean by that is, like, you have different percentages of those bacteria in your gut. And some of them are good for some things, some of them are bad, and unfortunately they're elevated. So scientists have found that if someone has a particular type of bacteria that's elevated, they are more likely to become overweight. And that's just the way it is. And they can get rid of that by using the right foods, but that's just an association of what having the right balance of gut microbiota has. So the ability to actually use time to determine your microbiome makeup is pretty impressive. And that's what, you know, Zoe does effectively. They look at three markers. They take blood work, they take your stool sample, and they tell you what your microbiome is made up of. And what they do is then send you your results, and you're able to look at it and go, okay, so I'm deficient in these. I need to improve that. And it's effectively like personalized nutrition, which is like where we're going. We want to be able to make sure that we can be told quantitatively what we should be putting into our bodies.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of those tests lately.
Do you have a favorite?
So
I'm going to get you Zoe, obviously, but yeah.
I used Viome.
Yep. Viome's good.
Still waiting for those results.
When did you send that out?
6 weeks ago.
Ooh, that's tough.
I know they're pretty backed up right now. I'm waiting for one to arrive right now to test EPA DHA.
Yep.
Fish oil.
Yep.
Really curious about that because I do supplement the fish oil.
Yep.
And just trying to learn as much as possible about what my body is telling me objectively. I think using objective and subjective data is super important. I actually learned how to use objective and subjective data in college. In a nutrition class, I had this class called experimental cooking.
Oh God, this is gonna be so much fun. How come I didn't know about this?
I had this, it was a mandatory class, experimental cooking. And it was essentially learning how to manipulate foods and recipes based off of diets that were required for patients with cardiovascular disease or diabetes. So we would look at ways to remove fats out of cookies and replace it with maybe applesauce, stuff like that. And then we would do objective and subjective testing where like we had these like contractions or whatever the word is, where you would measure like breakability and how much pressure it took to break the cookie. Objective dating like that. And then there'd be subjective where we would do blind testing with the entire class and you would rate what cookie tasted better. Or it was an amazing class. And I took a lot away from that and learned a lot.
Here's the thing, though. I love how you use quantitative and it's also qualitative. So like objective and subjective materials are so important because subjectively it's how you perceive, right? So you feel as if you're hungry versus someone saying you are hungry. So it's like so much better to actually have a balance of both. But one thing is hard is like, oh, one thing is great, sorry, is that the data doesn't lie. So you see that you're deficient in something, like, okay, sweet. But when you feel lack of energy, you're like, okay, I'm going to go do something. It's so important to react to that as opposed to like, sometimes the data is like, well, it doesn't show you have a lack of energy, but maybe the effect that you're going to have a banana is actually going to spruik you up because you feel as if you're just taking on the energy. So 100%. So good that you actually read that. I'm disappointed I didn't know that you've already done experimental cooking. That would have been a fun subject.
Oh, dude, I loved that class. I learned so much.
Dude, you're actually a really good cook, by the way.
I love cooking.
Yeah, I know. It's fucking heavy.
I mean, I love food. And when I say that, I think some people take that out of context. Like, it's not that I love eating. I enjoy eating. I'm not in love with eating. I'm in love with food and its function. Yes, I love eating as well. But you know what I'm saying? There's a difference between loving to eat and loving food for its nutritional benefits and function and the social experience it brings about.
Yeah.
I think there are two different things.
100%. I think we talked about this earlier. It's like people have been brought up in this bro science culture that you hit your macros, you hit your numbers, and everything else, sweet. Whereas now we're looking at, like you said this, you've changed the way you've thought about fueling for performance. It's like, how do I, as an individual, as whoever's listening right now, whatever your name is, you think for yourself, how do I improve myself given for me, bio-individuality? How do I not take someone else's keto diet, but look at myself and what's best for me and apply it by, you know, experimenting and finding out what's right for me by thinking about, okay, how do I feel? How did that actually make me feel after that meal? How is my sleep? How are all these things that are meant to be factors in helping you understand how you can be a better you through your performance? And these are key things that I guess that you and I are very strong in our beliefs. Like, in order to, for you to be the best you, it's for you to be the best you. It's not for you to be the best version of Nick Bear for you. It's the best version of you. And so I'm excited for people to start looking at themselves through bio-individual lenses where they can consume a meal, think how it actually made them feel, and if it works, sweet, can continue, as opposed to going, I'm going to be keto because so-and-so did. Does that make sense?
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Oh, who said that?
I don't know. I remember hearing it, and that's another thing. It's stuck. It's been a knowledge nugget that I can't get rid of because it's so true. You know, we compare our diets to other people. We compare our training to other people. We compare our muscle mass to other people, and everyone is different. Everyone is different. But I think being in tune with your own body and wanting to learn and accept that, I'm very in tune with my body. I know what foods make me feel good. I know how I'm going to function best. I'm just very in tune, and I think it's a responsibility that we all should uphold, but it also increases a lot of aspects of your life when you are in tune with your own body.
And you're also aware of its adaptive nature. You said earlier, it's important for people to know their gut microbiome can change. It's a funny way to think about it. It's like, I'm not feeding myself anymore. You still are 100%. You're feeding, because dietary fiber is what's consumed by your microbiome. But you also got to think of them because they live all around you. They live inside of you. They look around you. And supporting them supports you, just like eating everything else supports you. But just note that it's important to understand, and just like business, adapt to change. I think a lot of us coming out of COVID have had more time to sleep, think of their health, and also cook. And the art of it all is, like, cooking should be enjoyable. It should be fun. Do not be afraid to make mistakes. Cook a meal you like to cook. Use a recipe. There's plenty of resources out there. There's one called danchosher.com. Subtle plug.
Check it out.
But the idea is just, like, work within your means to find the best thing for you.
Well, I have two questions to wrap this one up.
Okay.
Have you seen the blue muffin come out yet?
Yeah, I have. Thank God.
How long did it take?
Oh, dude, mine was 8 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quick.
Yeah. So I had a very quick metabolism and breakdown situation.
My second question is, in your cookbook, what is the recipe to impress a girl?
Oh, dude, I got like 7. I know.
The recipe you cooked for me impressed me. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
much.
Dude, that pasta, man, that was fire.
That was
right?
Good. I've made that for Steph. I made that for Steph a few weeks ago. She loved it. Oh, yes. She loved it.
Yes. And you said it was all you, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would not want anything less. I love when people take credit. I love it. It's fucking great. Man, from my book, you know what? There's a dish in there that is pretty nostalgic to me because I teach people how to make pasta from scratch. And this is very early on. So I teach them like a basic bolognese. But why it's important is, one, it's the first dish that my family used to critique me over and over and over again. We'd have it every Monday night. I would make it. And every week they'd be like, Dan, too much sauce, too much this, or too acidic. And over the course of, you know, many years, I finally perfected this dish. The second part to it is I know for a fact there's at least 12 dudes who've proposed to their girlfriends over that dish, and all 12 said yes. So that's at least that's what they said.
That's a success rate right there.
Yeah, that's a great 12 from 12. The special sexy spaghetti bolognese is a sure thing for all you legends wanting to get cooking.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty epic, man.
Well, Dan, it was a pleasure. I'm sure we can have a bunch of other episodes talking about a whole bunch of different things. We only scratch the surface, but as always, you're full of knowledge. If anyone's looking for more information on you, where do you want to direct them to?
So you've got Instagram, Dan_Churchill, my man. And then you've got danchurchill.com, and you'll be able to filter through. And if you need to have some more personalized nutrition on that, you can actually funnel through and we can help you out there. Or listen to the podcast, because you've been on there, get experts from respective fields. And dude, like, I think one of the coolest things that you and I do by meeting people we do is like, you feel like you do an MBA because you learn from experts. You and I are constantly learning. And so, yeah, check out the podcast, just like where you listen to this one, The Epic Table. And of course, make sure if this is your first time listening to this awesome podcast, hit subscribe and give a review for Nick too.
Appreciate it.
Always, dude.
All right, man.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Bear Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please feel free to leave a review on iTunes or share it with a friend. It helps us to grow and reach more people in hopes of changing lives with the Go One More mindset. Head on over to bpnsups.com for all your health, performance, and nutrition needs. We offer a wide range of products to help you feel and perform at your highest level, built on quality and proven by results without compromise.